dove in my right hand. She took a quick picture, but even when we squinted, I didn't look so much like Robert Plant. She flew a fly that she made from a bedsheet. A sideways skull and a lopsided pentagram said,
hey, he got bored, so he started a podcast about the best bar band in the land, man. This is the Hood Rat Recap, and we are back. We are your steadiest stream of the unified scene, all the news and reviews of the greatest bar band in the world. You love them. We love them. Your friends and family, they maybe heard of them. They can't really speak of them, but that's all right because we have a safe place here for you to come on and speak with us. Hello, everybody. I'm going back to being upright, Mike. Because I guarded the upright the other day for 8 hours at the Vikings game. And then after my team lost to Kevin Winnever's team, then I balled up my security shirt with all my hopes and dreams and just hauled it all back to St. Paul. But whenever I do want to talk hold steady, I have to reach halfway across the country to the unified scene's very own King of Queens, Gasper. Gasper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you? But you know what? I've been trying to get people to call me GMC.
Why is that, Gasper?
Because I'm professional grade.
How's that working out for you?
Not so good. People have been calling me Hugo GV. So I'm just going to stick with King of Queens.
Oh my God, that's worse than Run GMC.
Yeah, Hugo GV. I didn't even know what that was for a second.
I didn't either. I thought he was going for a rap reference and not a pickup truck reference.
So I think we're hearing our producer right there. Unless
I like that I have my own audio intro now. I take it. Thanks, Craig.
So why don't you introduce our producer there, Gasper, even though we kind of sort of did.
So that's our on mic producer and third mic, Kevin is whatever. How are you doing today, Kev?
I am okay. Better than GMC, that's for sure. So I good to be back. This is going to be a fun episode because we got a lot to talk about. We know we wanted to do this earlier for all those listening at home, but schedules and everything didn't align. But for all the Hold Steady faithful, there's just been so much news over the last 2.5 weeks that kicked off the new year that I think we should just kind of dive right in and get it out there.
Yeah, definitely. It has been an explosion of news, and starting that all off was we got the first song from the new record, Sideways Skull. There is so much joy. So what do you guys think of it, man?
Yeah, I think it is so much joy. I mean, anytime they release a new song, I'm all over it. I listen to it a bunch of times. I've kind of had this with the last two albums when they released the first single. I think you were talking about this, Gasper, off air, but you listened to it so many times. I think by the time the album comes out, I kind of tend to skip that song because I just over, you know, and I want to hear the other songs. What do you guys think?
I disagree. I'm probably up to, like, no joke, 1,000 times listening to a song, but it just gets better every time. I think this is going to be a standard in the repertoire. It's one of my favorites so far.
I mean, I could say I haven't listened to it 1,000 times yet, but I have had quite a few listens. And the interesting thing, which, you know, people may or may not know, is this song has sort of been around for a couple of months now at this point. The band has played it, even on the last Bandcamp release from December of the LA show from September 9th. The live version is there, so... Sideways Skull has been around, and I remember, I think on the last episode when you guys were talking about going to the soundtrack party, they discussed this song, the logo, what the name means, and kind of have given us a peek into this song. So it's nice to finally hear the studio version of this. And I have to say, it's a very full song. There's a lot going on. It's quintessential Hold Steady, you know, and I agree with Gasper. I think it's going to become a fan favorite. Listening to one of the live versions from LA, like, it's already got sort of a clap along part in the middle where the breakdown is. It seems like fans have adapted this song into the lexicon of the Hold Steady already.
And like Craig has said about this album, he said it's very cinematic. And I think you get that right with this song. I mean, there's like a huge story arc, and it's, you know, a lot of characters, and we kind of feel like we get to know them all by the end of this little 3 minute song or whatever. And I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I think when we saw it live, I knew right away it was going to be a big fan favorite. It's got everything you want. It's, you know, it's a heavy hitting song. It's very hold steady in that it's got a lot of references. It's got a lot going on. And then it has the sing-along woo parts that everybody loves to do. And like, if you dive into the song, like, there's so much going on. So like the general story is like, they're clearly in a halfway house for like a rehab type situation. And this girl's maybe a little bit crazy, and she's talking to him about his band, her band. And like, the references you come across are so cool. Like, so like right up in the first verse, you're getting the description of that Robert Plant photo that like we've all seen 1,000 times. The picture where he's on stage and he's got the dove in the one hand and the beer and the cigarette in the other. And like, do you guys know the reference to that?
I don't remember where it was from, but just like the bird just landed on him when he was out there singing, right?
Yep. Basically, yeah.
He had a cigarette in one hand. I think the bird in the other.
It was a performance in 73. Zeppelin played the Kaiser Stadium in San Francisco. And so they released a bunch of doves into the audience, basically, and one lands on Robert Plant. And of course, there's professional photographers all around, and they snap this picture, which becomes iconic. It's, you know, when you Google Robert Plant, that's one of the main pictures that are going to come up. And it's like that kind of like painting the picture that you get in a Hold Steady song, that like, you know, exactly, like I knew exactly what he was talking about when, you know, when he's going there, and that's your first verse. And like, it's packed with that. There's so many references. I mean, so did you get the Queen reference is the, you know, he says she opens up, but we are the champions. Did you get the second song reference?
Well, that's a big Alice Cooper song from way back, right. I think in the early 70s. I don't remember the record, but I do remember it, you know, that's probably one of Alice's early day big hits is Under My Wheels.
Right. It's 71 and it's off of Killer is the record.
There you go.
But yes, it's actually the, when you Google it, it's the third most played Alice Cooper song live.
Oh, wow. See, it would be a hit. Well, and even before you get to that part, there's the part in between where they talk about the sideways skull and the lopsided pentagram, which, as we've come to learn from hearing Craig talk about it, you know, that was part of a Corrosion of Conformity logo where the song title comes from. So that is also like, so when you look at the sort of evolution, we're talking about Robert Plant and Led Zeppelin to Corrosion of Conformity to Queen and Alice Cooper. And that's before you even hit the first chorus.
Right. Right. And the story he tells, just to kind of recap that, is what he had in mind is like the way you kind of doodle in high school, like on your notebook, or people did it on jackets. They did. And then the band kind of admitted to each trying it on, like, you know, on one of their instruments or one of their cases, where trying to draw a Corrosion of Conformity logo is like really hard to do. And that's what he had in mind, was like, they always kind of came out a little bit bent, you know?
So yeah, another reoccurring theme, you know, we've seen Craig go back to this quite a bit, where back in, you know, we're in a halfway house now. And, you know, that's kind of like the first signal off the last album, where Family Farm starts out, where he's at a halfway house. And then, you know, going way back to Cattle and the Creeping Things, where, you know, he does the line, you know, I heard the dude blame the chick blame the snake, and I heard they're naked when they're busted. Like, you know, they're going through the part where they start talking about religion, and right, like they always do when they're in recovery or whatever. So this is a theme he's gone back to, and it was all over the last album, and it sounds like, you know, here it comes on the first song again.
So when he's talking about that part in Separation Sunday, is it a halfway house, or is he talking about something me and Kevin actually would both be familiar with, CCD? Do you remember, like, that? Do they have that out in Minnesota, CCD, where like Wednesdays you leave public school early and you go to the local church and you get taught all about religion and stuff? And it becomes almost like, when you get a little older, it's like an institution, and you kind of resent it a little bit. So like, I think he even at one point, and I forget what song it is, where he says Holly was supposed to be at CCD, but she was walking out on shady streets.
Oh,
that's but same idea though, basically.
Okay.
Do you guys have a favorite line from the song yet?
Yeah, let me find it here. I think it's the one you said that was the best line. I think that's the best line.
I go back and forth with, so my...
But it's hard to fully rock in a halfway house.
That's the line. So he says it both ways. But it's, yeah, it's hard to fully rock in a halfway house is, like, to me, so clever. Like, but that chorus, man, when you look at the chorus, like, that's something that was our childhood. You know what I mean? Those jackets with the patches and, like, I had one of those, you know what I mean? With the big patch Iron Maiden on the back and, like, Metallica around the bottom and, like, all the buttons all over it. Like, we've all had that. And, like, the depiction of, like, that it's held together by the patches and the buttons. Like, I love that.
Also, and then he's got also in the chorus, he's got laminates and backstage passes, which is total Krig. He's, you know, how many songs does he have? Mention that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that would be Laminates was the last song.
And then I like one of my other favorite songs is They'd Be a Lot Better If They Weren't Burnouts when he's talking about the band.
I looked up the band name and I wanted that to be something. So he says, I got a band too.
Called The Price of Progress.
Called The Price of Progress, which is, of course, the name of the record.
Right. And so, like, there's a bunch of references to The Price of Progress. It's, I looked that up. It's obviously the title of the record. It's also an article written by John Brody, who's a professor and an anthropologist. There was a documentary called The Price of Progress in 2019. There's also this civil rights piece of artwork, which I've seen before, which basically depicts a bunch of African Americans with, like, protest signs protesting for civil rights. And then, like, the police are coming in, like, all heavy handed. And that's called The Price of Progress. And so the theme is generally the same there. It's this idea that as we move forward, there's a cost to it. And what is that cost? And each of these things touch upon that in a different way. So we definitely got to look for that in the record, because I would imagine he's going to look to tackle the same themes.
Is it a real band? Because he says she has a hairbrush mic and a fantasy band, which sounds right. Like a kid doing a band to me, you know, like how we do when we're little kids.
No, I kind of got the impression that, like, this girl's not getting out of this halfway house. Like, this is all in her head, you know, and then he kind of just plays along at the end.
Okay. Right, because at the end, it totally wraps up with them talking about the depression medication and, you know, it never works when no one listens, but it's sure to nice to meet some fellow musicians. Like,
right.
It's kind of basically saying, sure, in our head, we're all great musicians and we're going to go play the pyramids and do all these great things and go tour Europe. But the reality is they're in a halfway house trying to get clean. And there is no band. There is no music. It's just all right. Straight in their head in a show that's going on while trying to get yourself straightened out.
Right.
That's how I heard it and read it. Like, you know, looking at the lyrics, it's a very contrived story. Like, starting with them in this halfway house getting a Marlboro, and she's taking the picture. But look, oh, it's not the Robert Plant. And then it just sort of ties into these great big looks of, you know, music, whether it's We Are the Champions or Alice Cooper. They make the Beatle reference about them in their boots, like, you know.
Right. But it's all the appearance of rock and roll, right? The concept of, like, all these big things playing the pyramids and all the things you're saying, like, these the idea of we're going to be a rock and roll band, but, like, not any of the music,
right?
Which brought up the – so when he says – he names the band The Price of Progress, and he says that they have the reputation as New Hampshire's hardest. Did you look into that at all? So that when you Google who is New Hampshire's hardest rock and roll band, you get this reference to the Shags, who I'm unfamiliar with, but they're, like, from New Hampshire, and they're known for being this horrible, like, not talented, couldn't play their own musician band, but like, it was that whole idea of, like, all image, you know, you know, nothing, almost like the Sex Pistols, but worse.
See, I was getting a very Mountain Goats feel off that. When, what is it, the hardest ever death metal band in Denton? So that's what I kind of...
The hardest death metal band in Denver.
Isn't it in Denton? Is it Denver?
I gotta look it up.
Look it up.
If it's not Denver, then I've been singing it wrong for a while.
Oh, I can't wait to see how this plays out. At least it's not something I said, so if one of you guys get proven wrong, it's not my line this time, so about time.
The best ever death metal band out of Denton, with a couple of guys who been friends since grade school. One was named Cyrus, the other was Jeff, and they practiced twice a week in Jeff's bedroom. The best ever death metal band.
We have the best ever death metal band in Denton. Now we got to look up the Denton. We're Denton it. You're off by one letter.
That's gonna be in Ohio, isn't Denton in Ohio?
It's got to be.
Yeah.
Yep, Denton, Ohio.
Well, there's also a Denton, Texas, I think.
Ooh, that makes more sense because they aren't they? He's from Texas, right? Originally, when he's a kid,
mostly pulling up Ohio on Google likes Ohio better. It seems like. But.
Oh. If you just put in where is Denton. Denton, Texas comes up first. There is a Denton, North Carolina, too. There is Denton, Maryland.
One of our Mountain Goat fans, and I know we have plenty of them, is going to have to set us straight on this for sure. Yeah.
I would just like to state on the record, this is not a Kevin is whenever error. This is either...
Oh, no, I will claim this one.
Upright Mike or GMC. This is one of their mistakes for this episode.
I'll definitely claim this one because I've been singing at Denver since forever. Good. So,
but yeah, that's kind of that brought me back to that line in that song is what that kind of reminded me of. So did you guys have any more else on the song or did you want to kind of talk? We got some details on the album. You know, we only have the one release right now, but we can see how many the titles and how many songs there are.
Yeah. So, this is the 9th studio album and it's coming out March 31st, which feels like it's forever away. Cause I mean, we've heard some of the stuff already now, but like, I need to hear the whole record and it's different. Like it's different hearing the record. Like, don't you think it's different here in the studio? Cause like when you're there live, like it's cool and you could vibe with the song, but you don't know what's going on in the song. It's too hard. But now you can kind of really get into the mix of like we're doing here, and I need to do that on all of these songs. So
yeah, they don't become sing along songs until you get the you hear it a few times on the release. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about it on one of the last episodes, but it's always so interesting to me, especially with a band like this, where the price of progress is 10 songs, and we've already heard 4 of them at this point live. So when you stand there, you're like. To me as a fan, like I love hearing the songs I know, but I'm the anomaly where I like hearing a song that I don't know because it's always fun to me to hear where the band is going. And I know at some point it's going to be on the record. So hearing, you know, listening to the live version of Sideways Skull and comparing it to the studio version, I mean, you can hear that they're really good at reproducing it, but there's something about when you finally get to experience the fullness that their producer and them in the room have created, it really takes on a different vibe. You know, that's the difference of any song live to, you know, the studio recording. And that's why you go back and listen to your favorite records, even though you might see your favorite band 100 times, it's the song on the record that gets you there.
Right. I mean, and, Like we're doing with this, like we've heard Carlos is crying at least, 3-4 times now? But yeah. Can anyone say what that song's about? I have no idea. You know, like there's too much going on.
Well, the singer kind of slaughtered a wannabe lover. Someone went to fetch a few more pitchers. It wasn't all that crowded because the softball games had washed out in the rain. Stepped out of my shift due to some sort of screw up with the schedule.
I've listened to it on Bandcamp quite a few times, and I think it's a bunch of guys sitting at a bar or a restaurant, but it kind of gets like, you know, a sports bar type thing, and one of the guys has a breakdown, and that's Carlos, and hence Carlos is crying as well.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right, so yeah, speaking of the producer, Josh Kaufman is the producer once again on this record. It's coming out on Positive Jams Thirsty Tiger. And so it's 10 songs, right? You get Grand Junction, which we've heard, Sideways Skull, which we have, Carlos is Crying, which we were talking about, Understudies, Sixers, which Mike is still holding out to be the basketball song, right?
Yeah, I still want it to be an old school basketball song. Yeah.
The Birdwatchers, City at 11. I'm going to mess this one up. Perdido?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Spanish word. I looked it up. So there are two references to Perdido. There's, it's the Spanish word for lost. It's yeah. also a jazz standard composed by Juan Tiesel that was recorded on December 3rd, 1941 by Duke Ellington. It is also the deepest floating oil platform in the world at a water depth of 2,450 meters.
I'm pretty sure that's the one Craig's referencing is that one.
I'm kind of hoping, because when I saw that, I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. That could be
I was
fun.
Just joking. I don't think it is. But.
Well, we'll see. But those are your three definitions of Perdido. And then you have Distortions of Faith and Fly Over Halftime. And they're in and out in 38 minutes and 45 seconds.
That seems really quick.
It does. It's like a punk record. And so in other news about the record, you got multicolored versions coming out. So if you're ordering the record through the Hold Steady site, you're getting the green copy. They have the so that's green translucent, and there's three others. There's metallic gold, which is through an independent retail exclusive. Metallic silver, which is from Vinyl Me, and white, which is coming from Rough Trade.
And going back to the 10 songs that you just kind of went through and the length, the interesting thing is there's only four songs out of the 10 that are over 4 minutes. The longest coming in at 5:16, which is Distortions of Faith. So everything is sort of on the 3.5 minute side. You know, we even have the shortest song on the record is City at 11, which is 2:49. So when you have a 39-minute record with 10 songs and only four of them are over 4 minutes, you could see why,
right?
You know, it comes in as short as it does.
Now, do you think they're doing that to be more punk rock, or do you think they're doing that to jam more songs into like a massive night's weekend?
You know, I think there's something to be said about the shorter song for a band like this, because it just means they're going to play more, you know? Look, when you go see them live, for the most part, they're doing 25 songs a night. So now you start adding in 3 and 4 minute new songs. You get to 30 and you're not extending the show to an uncomfortable length. So there's something to be said for that. Also, we did get the album cover has been released, which for most people might just look like a building, but is actually a very famous building in Camden, New Jersey. Called the Broadway Trust Company. It's a building that's on the corner of Broadway and Walnut Street in Camden, which was a bank that sort of survived the Depression, was around from World War I. I did read, looking into it, that in 1990 was made a national landmark and was being used as a church. And in 2019, the church caught fire. So if you notice on the album cover, the front of the building is actually burnt. And the story I read in the Jersey newspaper was that the fire department was just driving by the building and saw smoke coming out of it. And it wasn't like an actual call. And they proceeded to put it out. This was in 2019 in February. So that would have been 4 years ago next month. And that's what we now have as our album cover, which is sort of an interesting choice. I'll be curious to hear them talk about it and see why that building was something that they opted to make their album cover.
Right.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if it's something's mentioned about it in one of the other songs. And I just got a trivia question later in the show, but I got a little impromptu one for you guys right here. Do you think this album, what did we say the length of it is? It's 39
minutes.
38 minutes and 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. So when I think of their short albums, I think of their first one, Almost Killed Me. Do you think this is longer or shorter than Almost Killed Me?
I'm going to say it's shorter than Almost Killed Me, but I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also shorter. For some reason, I felt like Almost Killed Me was low 40s.
You are correct. It's almost 5 minutes shorter. Almost Killed Me was 42 minutes and 51 seconds, almost 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that seems like a real short album to me, or at least it seems like the songs go by pretty fast.
But. So is it safe to say that their ninth studio album is actually the shortest record they've put together? I haven't compared it to the others.
Looked them all up. But
I'd be really curious to take a look at Thrashing Through the Passion. I bet you that comes close.
Look it up.
That's why I have a computer in front of me.
and see what it says. Let's see.
Ooh, 30, that might be shorter, 35, 34.
Yeah, that makes sense.
There you go.
Because if you think about it, like thrashing was originally a bunch of singles. I mean, I don't even know if they were planning on coming out with a record. And then it just, because I think at that point they were just making a decision on what to do. And they were doing the Bandcamp thing and releasing record, releasing singles. And then they decided to put out, like, here's a bunch more songs and we'll make it a record. And that's right around the time when, like, there's almost like a rebirth to the whole study, right? Because prior to that was Teeth Dreams, which was possibly going to be the end of the whole study. So this was like a transition time for them. So I'm not surprised that's their shortest record.
And Thrashing Through the Passion also comes in at 10 songs. So
yeah, yeah. So you see, look at that. Yeah, and it's just about 4 minutes shorter. Wow. Very interesting.
But now Thrashing has like some of the most beloved songs from the band at this point. So maybe the shorter is the way to go. I don't know.
And actually looking at a lot of their albums, you know, none of their albums were ever overly long. I mean, deluxe versions aside.
Right.
But, you know, the actual original releases, everything was sort of in the 40-minute range for the most part. I don't think I see any records that have tripped over that length. So, you know, while we're looking at it now with the sort of viewpoint we are.
Right. And you're probably right that I'm probably counting deluxe songs. Because at this point, like Boys and Girls in America seems so much longer to me. And Separation Sunday seems longer to me. You know, so you're probably right. So, then, I mean, to 2 minutes, you're not really talking about much of a difference.
Right.
You know.
And the Open Door Policy, their previous album before this, comes in at 40 minutes and 30 seconds. So I'll stop talking about times now. But
we're sorry to bore you with times. But it's just interesting as we sort of break into these this new stuff we have in front of us. Right. It's the first chance we've gotten to sort of dissect it that way.
Yeah.
A little disappointed about the March 31st. I was thinking February. I don't know. When they said first quarter, I go, oh, it'll probably be February, maybe even earlier.
That's about as... That's the last day you could get for first quarter. So April 1st is technically second quarter by calendar. So but they literally are to the last day you could potentially get and still can say first quarter.
That being said, though, there is so much going on this year. Like, you're getting a ton of Hold Steady, like, every month if you look at the schedule. Mm-hmm. Right? So you got the next thing coming up is January 28th is Music Hall of Williamsburg. Which is going to be an amazing show. And then they're in Baltimore, Washington, and Philly in February. There's shows coming in Portland in April that we're still waiting to hear about. They're back in New York and then Boston in May. This takes them straight through to, let's see.
Massive Nights. There's
May, we have June, we have July, September, October, November. This is the whole year. They're doing something all year.
Right.
And that, but I mean, just to kind of go through that a little bit. So I'm really excited to be going to the show on the 28th. I know I saw a lot of people on the Facebook group are going. This is, just to tell you a little bit about it, this is the 20th anniversary of the first Hold Steady show, which was played at a venue called North Six, which is now Music Hall of Williamsburg. So it's the original venue, just a different name. And in that show in 2003, they opened up for Steve Coaster, who's a friend of theirs. And now they have Steve coming back with his band, Two Dark Birds, who are opening for them. So it's like, this is the original show, basically. I think that's kind of cool. Like, it's, if you're going to celebrate your 20th anniversary, that's an interesting way to do it. And
I also think if you look at the calendar and the dates we have announced, and that's not to say more aren't coming, there's Hold Steady shows basically every month announced at this point, aside from August. You have February, you have March, there's the Weekender in the UK. You have April, these potential Portland dates.
Right.
You know, May, there's a potential another New York and two Boston plays. June and July is Chicago, two sold out dates at the Salt Shed with the Mountain Goats and the Dillinger Four. Right. So,
which Mike and I will be at. That's going to be a party. Yeah, I can't wait for that.
So like, it's just, there's so September, they're in Jersey City and Philly, October, Vegas, and then you hit November and we're back at Massive Nights.
So,
and that's just all we have in front of us now with plenty more dates that could potentially, like Craig right. always says, they're open for business. So who else is going to call between now and then?
A weird anomaly I see on that schedule is they could play Brooklyn Bowl five shows in a row, because October 7th just says Las Vegas. But wouldn't the Brooklyn Bowl Las Vegas be the most, wouldn't that make the most sense for the venue for them to play at Las Vegas?
Probably, but Kev would probably know better than I do as far as how venues in Vegas go. Because so many of them are tied to casinos and there's residencies out there. Like, how does that work?
I mean, the whole thing with Vegas is, you know, they're playing to sort of the transient vacationer clientele. Mm-hmm. Aside from the locals. So, I mean, Brooklyn Bowl makes sense. The Brooklyn Bowl in Vegas is a very big venue, but, you know, there's a House of Blues out there. There is the, you know,
the well, they have the great relationship with Brooklyn Bowl. So that's
what yeah. So it would kind of make sense for them to go there, but
and they're
it
playing
doesn't,
Brooklyn
it doesn't mean
Bowl.
They have to be.
What Brooklyn Bowl are they playing? They're playing one in a different city. What is it?
Yeah.
Philly in February, the one in, February 4th is the Brooklyn Bowl in Philly.
Man, I don't know how many more shows I can afford, but if they play Brooklyn Bowl in Vegas, I might have to go to that.
Nice. You could be our coverage out there. I mean, I know what you mean, though, because like I said, I'm going on the 28th, and then not even on the schedule is a Craig Finn appearance at Carnegie Hall the end of February. He's playing a piano recital, which I'm really excited to be going to. And it won't be just him. It'll be other artists as well, but he's also doing that, which is going to be cool. But then, like I said, we're going to the Salt Shed two nights, and then they added the third night at the Empty Bottle, which, like, that's an infamous show for them. Like, I love the cover art from that they put on the T-shirt. And, like, I always hear people talking about that show, and I know they released the live version of that show on Bandcamp, and I would have loved to buy tickets for that, but I just can't justify staying another day in Chicago. I already got my plans made. But then there's the, like Kevin was saying, in May, there's the WFUV Highline Bash, which is a concert series they do at City Winery, which I'm going to totally look to jump on. And then Jersey that's Eagle. They haven't announced the venue, but that's Eagle Whitehall. I've seen them there twice. That's a lot of fun to go see them at. It's very similar to Brooklyn Bowl in the setup. And it's just right when you go through the city and come out the Holland Tunnel, it's like right there. So I'm going to try to go to that, or I'm going to drag Kevin to Philly. I haven't decided yet.
I was going to say they're playing Jersey City, New Jersey on September 22nd, which is Bruce Springsteen's birthday, but that's not – when I was a kid, that was his birthday. Now it's December or September 23rd. They moved it back a day. I don't know why. But so they're playing Jersey the day before his birthday. So,
right. That would be a fun show to be at. I did also notice on their website the February shows in Baltimore, Washington, and Philly – they're actually doing a 3-day ticket. So, like, even though they're not even playing the same market, because Homesteady right. fans are as loyal as they are, they're literally selling a 3-day pass for the folks that are deciding to venture from Baltimore into the show in DC and then to Philly, which Baltimore and DC are right near each other, but
right.
Philly is still a couple of hours away.
That's a little more common when you get to like those areas. Like I know, like when you talk to David and some of the people we see at the shows, like they'll go to adjoining states. We don't in New York. We don't tend to do that as much. like I said, I'll go to Jersey City, but like okay. Philly's a bit of a hike. You know what I mean? Like I would go if I could drag Kevin with me or if I could drag a friend with me. But like that's a rough one to go to by yourself. Boston would be a lot of fun, but like that's far for us. So you can't make them all. You know.
New Yorkers, everything comes to you. You just have to sit there and wait for it. I mean, how many shows? You got, what, 8 shows this
year? That's the thing. It's like there's so many New York appearances. It's like you got to explain this stuff to the wife, too.
And then
you know?
It says September. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I will say, like, for as much as the Philly show on February 4th at the Brooklyn Bowl is on a Saturday, I actually have a client playing in Philly on the Sunday. So maybe I'll just make a trip of it. Like, I'll go for the whole study on the Saturday and then just stay for my client and then come back.
Oh, interesting. We could have Kevin cover a show that neither you or I have been at. I like this idea.
That could happen. It could be something I might have to pull off.
Well, I'm still waiting for the Minneapolis St. Paul is what they got it listed at. I'm actually hoping this one goes St. Paul because I've never seen them play St. Paul. And in St. Paul, there's the Palace, which is like 107 years old, which is old for Minneapolis St. Paul. I know in New York, that's nothing. But so that's a theater that was closed for like 20-something years. It started out having the Harpo Brothers play there. And then in the 70s, it was like a XXX porn theater or whatever you call that. And then it closed for 30 years. And then I saw Atmosphere open it up for the first time when it was like 100 years old or whatever. So I hope that, and First Avenue owns that. So hopefully that would be a good fit for them. But it'll be interesting to see where they play there.
Yeah.
All right. So we got show dates. Did you guys want to move into my little trivia game here?
Yeah, definitely. So do we have a name for this trivia game? Or the segment?
Not
or?
Yet. I'm thinking of calling it Who's Craig Singing About?
Okay.
Because, in every song, you know, he makes some really references to some people. Like in one early song, he talks about Jada Pinkett. I mean, who's Jada Pinkett? We have no idea who that is. I'm just kidding. But at the time, we didn't. It was a very rare, when he sang about that way back in the early 2000s, which was really weird that he put her in a song. But
so this is the Hold Steady Almost Quizzed Me segment. That's what we're
there
going.
You go. That could
ooh,
be
I
it.
Like it.
The Hold Steady could be better. Quizzed Me. Kevin's in charge of making a jingle now for that.
So, I'll get on that. By the next time, I'll have something going.
Okay, so today's clip comes from we were talking Thrashing Through the Passion. This is Star 18, the song Star 18. And should I just play it for you? And you get, I mean, it says the name of the person, but that I have a trivia question about them. So,
sure.
You guys ready for it?
Sure, do it.
Okay.
Sorry I'm late, I got caught in the mosh with this dude who said he used to play with Peter Tosh. But he never brought it up again once I said, man, I don't believe you.
I love that man, I don't believe you line. So he mentions, did you guys hear who he mentioned there?
Yep. It was Peter Tosh, right?
Right.
Peter Tosh. So this might be, I'm afraid this is going to be too easy. But so he's talking about Peter Tosh's solo career, you know, how Craig always keeps it really random like that. And I think that's really cool that he's talking about his solo career. My question is, what band did Peter Tosh come up in? Where did he break his bones with it? I think Kevin knows the answer.
I know the answer to that. Yeah. It's very famous. And
I know the answer as well because Heather would kill me if I didn't know the answer to this.
So I made it too easy. But so how are we going to do this? Should we take the first person that gets it correct on Twitter?
Oh, let's just see how many people answer it.
I think we should. Yeah. Like if you know the answer, you should tweet us. Because we'd be curious to know. Like I said, I know it. Gasper knows it. Mike asked a question. Sort of as a bonus question, if you really want to get fancy, he does make a Caught in the Mosh reference. So for extra credit, yeah. Right good before one. That.
What is that a reference to?
What is that a reference from?
Like it.
So like, okay. We could have two answers here. We're going deep in the trivia.
I say the correct answer would be the two-parter. So you have to give us what is Peter Tosh's original band that he's famous for? And what is Caught in a Mosh a reference to?
I agree.
Okay. All right. And if you want to send us in some answers, you can send that to our Twitter account, which is just @HoodRatRecap. And we'll be looking forward to your answers. You could hashtag the Hold Steady Almost Quizzed Me.
And we don't really have any prizes. We don't have any windbreakers to send you, but we'll probably read your name off on air is probably what we'll do if that's okay with you.
In fact, we'll read anybody that sends the right answer. So if you're listening to this and you want to fire up your Google and tweet us the correct answer, if you get it to us, we will call you out. And once we get a closet of prizes, you never know. We might pay back retroactively.
All right. Do we have another trivia question or are we ending it there?
That's all I had. I mean,
all right, okay. Well, look, we'll have a new question. I'll have a new trivia question next episode. Gasper, why don't you tell them what the next episode that we're going to be doing down the line is going to be? I think that'll be exciting for our listeners.
On our next episode, we're going to be speaking to the ladies of the Hold Steady Is for Women. We've mentioned them a few times, and they've mentioned us a few times, so thank you very much, guys. But they are a podcast also about the Hold Steady, and we're going to have them on. And we're hoping to get this in around Valentine's Day. We'll see how that works out. The theme behind this episode is going to be the unified dating scene. We are going to pick a couple of Hold Steady songs and discuss how relationships are depicted in the Hold Steady universe. So I think that's going to be some fun. Hopefully, like I said, we get this in around Valentine's Day, so that all makes sense.
I refer to it in terms of our guests, it's the Hold Steady is for lovers. So I like to make reference to our guests of the Hold Steady is for women.
But, all right, we could talk about the title of the episode. I like it.
You know, we just that's how I talk about it in the privacy of my own home.
Gotcha. All right. And in the meantime, the girls have a episode coming up. They've been promoting, I think they said mid-January. It should be out soon. They are hyping an interview they have. So we're excited to hear who they got. Last week, we spoke to them. They said it's going to be something we'll all be excited about. So I think it's going to be a fun interview. So definitely go check them out. You could find them at The Hold Steady is for Women on pretty much anywhere podcasts are played. And then also next episode, we'll probably talk a little bit about the Craig recital, the piano recital thing, because that'll be happening right around that same time. So hopefully we'll get that in as well.
I also expect a recap of the 28th show, the 20th anniversary show, because you'll have been at that by the time we
actually, you're right. That. So that'll be more likely. And I actually know that Kaylee, who is one of the girls from the Hold Steady is for Women, will be at that show. So we'll be able to talk to them about that show as well. And now that I think about it, the piano recital probably won't make next episode, because if all goes according to plan, that's not till the end of February. But we'll get it in there. So, all right. You guys got anything else?
Well, as I say every time, if you like what we do here on the Hood Rat Recap podcast, tell a friend, drop us a note on any of our socials. We do this because you listen and we have a good time doing it. So if you appreciate what we do, tell a friend, drop us a like, subscribe. All of those little bits help us continue to keep this show rolling. So thanks for listening.
I just wanted to thank everybody. The amount of listens we've had lately, the numbers have just been jaw dropping. I mean, just want to say us and all three of us just really appreciate it, and just thank you for that.
Absolutely,
yeah. Great. Yeah,
you guys are definitely the best. Tell your friends. And if you're looking for that social media, we're pretty much on everything. You'll find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Discord. The easiest way to find all of those places, the best jumping off point, is going to be Linktree. So that's linktr.ee/thehoodratrecap. And there you can find all our social media as well as all the episodes to this podcast. So we hope you do check that out. And I'm Gasper. That's Mike. That's Kevin. And all us guys, and all you guys, we are all the Hood Rat Recap.
A car party sounds good.